Jai Ma, and I promise to be brief, but I'll touch upon the essential aspects so that we can have more question answers. Well, Shurbindo in his author note itself describes, he says that it's the story told in the Mahabharata as a tale of conjugal love conquering death. Now mark the words conjugal love, which implies it's a very human love. And human love in all its shades, in all its completeness. That's what conjugal love implies. So, what is so special about it? And that's where the mother says very interestingly, only human beings can love in its ultimate, utmost force. There was a movie which was shown on Sati Anusuya. And she says that human beings can love this way. Even the gods cannot love this way, only because human beings have a psychic being. And as we know that psychic is the door of love. In fact, several places the mother says, for the mind knowledge, for the vital power, for the physical beauty and for the psychic love. So it is the core. At the same time, love is the supreme alchemist energy. So mother says that, well, consciousness has created the universe. She says it is true that consciousness has created the universe, but love is the savior. So love is the one which descended, the original descent, the lines about which he was saying, where self is not. Now, complete forgetfulness and losing oneself, she plunged into the depths of creation. Death cave, where love has no right. So it is in this sense, because these beautiful, powerful lines from the issue. So love is the power that uplifts and unites. Is the power that unites. So there are two kinds of union. One is it unites the entire creation in the, you know, in a interconnectedness. So one can look at love even as the idea of yajna actually coming from love, because there is nothing like which is separate and alone. Everything is interconnected by the chain of love, link of love. And at another level, it is also the power that uplifts creation towards its origin, the divine. So her plunging into that space where self is not, and yet that power of love does not forget itself and slowly uplifts everything toward the divine. And against this power is death. Death is all that pulls back everything away from the divine, back into the inertia, into the inconscient and the rock bottom. So this is the original struggle, and in every human being this struggle takes place, in every society, in every way. So this is the background, and we see that in the very first canto of book one, we see this descent of love, but it's described as very beautifully as the sun and the ray of the sun descending into earth. And as the Divine Mother comes, she looks back for a while, and then the passage closes and she comes and merges even in the mud of earth nature. And that, you know, the prostrate soil bore the awakening ray. So it is the ray that awakens everything to a new possibility. And it does so because love is the power that really pushes us out of the ego self, which is what is important. If mankind has to truly live in a sense of unity and a higher purpose, it must come out of the ego self. And love is the power that does it most beautifully, but very brief lived. So we can just read like a homage to this power, these little lines which describe what love is. They are from the Book of Love and Canto 2, Satyavan. A mystery. Now she is describing about love. To live, to love are signs of infinite things, because life has infinite possibilities. Love brings out the highest divine possibilities. Love is a glory from eternity's spheres, abased, disfigured, mocked by baser mind, so we must understand that, you know, the love that is being spoken of, because it's a very loosely used word. Well, as human beings, we define things in our own little way. But love in its origin is something very tremendous. It has the ultimate alchemist energy, and even in human life we can see, which we will read a few lines below. that steal his name and shape and ecstasy, and we know all that, attachment, attractions, passions, all are mistaken for love. He is still the Godhead by which all can change. So while human beings try to deny this power or stifle this power, they are almost afraid of this power, even in spiritual pursuits, that well, if love enters the scene, the whole life can become topsy-turvy. And it is true that it gets debased, etc. Yet it is the power which alone can change everything. A mystery wakes in our inconscient stuff. A bliss is born that can remake our life. Love dwells in us like an unopened flower awaiting a rapid moment of the soul. Or he roams in his charmed sleep mid thoughts and things. The child God is at play, he seeks himself. So when, people are moved by love, very human love, they think, I love that person. But it's not that. Love is seeking itself, actually. And that's why it's so beautiful. You see God in the other person. That's the beauty of love. But alas, for a short while, because that's a different story, why that happens. In many hearts and minds and living forms, he lingers for a sign that he can know. And when it comes, wakes blindly to a voice. So as it is said that love is blind, it is blind. Yes, it's blind to all that is dark and ugly. It just sees beauty. So that's why when somebody is moved by love, you see the all beautiful in the person. Even if the world is saying, look here, the person has this defect or that defect. Well, love has that capacity. So this is the power. A look, a touch, the meaning of a face, his instrument, the dim corporeal mind of celestial insight, now forgetful grown. He seizes on some sign of outward charm, which could be a face, the voice, or maybe something in the nature, to guide him mid the throng of nature's hints, reads heavenly truths into earthly semblances, desires the image for the Godhead's sake. It seeks itself. It sees the Godhead of love and the divine, because that is the door to the divine, and therefore it takes that the person whom we love is ultimately God. But yes, as I said, the ego veil comes in, the shield comes in, because human nature is very far from that kind of perfection, and things change. Divines the immortalities of form and takes the body for the sculptured soul. Divines the immortality of form. It believes that this love will be forever, life after life. So this is the beauty of love. Love's adoration, like a mystic seer, through vision looks at the invisible. In earth's alphabet finds a godlike sense. But the mind only thinks, behold the one for whom my life has waited long unfilled. Behold the sudden sovereign of my days. Heart feels for heart, limb cries for answering limbs. All strives to enforce the unity of all is. Too far from the divine, love seeks his truth. And life is blind and the instruments deceive. And powers are there that labor to debase. Still can the vision come, the joy arrive. Now this is the possibility that human love can be transmuted into something much higher. Rare is the cup fit for love's nectar wine, as rare the vessel that can hold God's birth. His soul, made ready through 1,000 years, is the living mold of a supreme descent. So love is the raw energy, like we can take human life, that we are given some raw materials. Little bit of, mind with capacity of knowledge, gathering information, life energy, a little bit of will to achieve things, and of course the body and the heart. Now, we don't understand what to do with them. We just accept the limitations. But each of these is a portal or a door to transmute our life into a life divine. So we are given the task, which is the raw material, and this has to be transmuted into its divine equivalent. That's what the yoga of transformation ultimately is, that all our nature, all the movements of nature can be transmuted into the divine possibilities. And this is possible because our inferior nature is a derivative from the higher source. So this is the basic logic of transformation. Now, how to do it? Now, that's where comes the descent of the Divine Mother as embodiment of love. In a way, all the dashavatar of the Ishvara and the Divine Mother can all be seen as a story of love. What is the story of love? We hear that Earth goes crying for help because she is filled with adharma and asuras, and God himself comes. Now, we take this story very casually, but we can imagine that consciousness, supreme consciousness, taking a human body out of love for the Earth. So, Divine comes for the love of Earth, and Sri Aurobindo in one of his letters says very interestingly, when he is asked, sir, I hope the human civilizations or humanity will be saved. He says, about the human civilization, I cannot guarantee, but the Earth will be saved, that is for sure. And if you read a letter of the mother, there also she says very clearly, and the Earth was saved. So it is the love of the Divine for Earth. She is a conscious goddess, and he comes there because it is his original promise with Earth and all the earthlings. So that promise automatically, because, you know, we are at one level her children, and at another level we are children of the Divine. So that alchemist energy, we are the bridge between the human love and the Divine love, and human knowledge and the Divine knowledge, and human life and the Divine life. This is our role. But in that, love is the power that can transform. That's what Mother described very beautifully, that if you ask me the power that can transform it, it is love. But that love is very difficult for human nature to even conceive, let alone bear. So the Divine comes and shows the way. So we have a wonderful description of Savitri, who has embodied that love. And you know, there is a whole long passage, but I'll just read a few lines when Sri Aurobindo introduces Savitri. And he says, love came to her hiding the shadow death. Well might he find in her his perfect shrine. So love has come seeking his own shrine in a human body. And what is it about her that makes her the perfect shrine of love? So we have that wonderful description that, you know, her mind a sea of white sincerity, passionate in flow, had not one turbid wave. And it goes on, beauty, joy, ananda, truth, all these are accompaniments of love. You can't have love where there is no truth. You can't have love where there is no joy, and, you know, there is no sense of beauty. It brings, awakens all these. And then that master movement of love which Savitri embodies, a wide self-giving was her native act. So if I read life of Mother and Sri Aurobindo, one thing that touches me, that they gave and gave and gave and gave more and more and more with zero expectations from anyone. Mother's famous Mahavakya, that Mother, what can we expect from you? And she says, everything. What do you expect from us? Nothing. So this only the Divine can say, because this is the movement of love, self-giving. And in that self-giving, what is included? A magnanimity as of sea or sky, enveloped with its greatness, all that came and gave a sense as of a great in world. So this love does not stifle. It does not give itself with the idea of possessing for one's own sake. So many disciples, but Mother and Sri Aurobindo would not command them, do this for me. No. That is a love which releases the greatness in everyone, releases the divinity in everyone. This is the nature of this love. Her kindly care. So it's a package. It's not just an emotional feeling. It has in its service, it has in its care, it has in it affection. Everything is there. Her kindly care was a sweet temperate sun, her high passion a blue heaven's equipoise. Now this high passion is actually Kali's love, which comes very prominently in Savitri. When Satyavan is taken away, that by death, one can experience that love of Kali, which chases him right into the shadow and into the den of death. But that'll be stretching it too far. And then these few lines. As might a soul fly like a hunted bird, escaping with tired wings from a world of storms, and a quiet reach like a remembered breast in a haven of safety and splendid soft repose, one could drink life back in streams of honey fire, recover the lost habit of happiness. So when people ask me, say for example, about ashram, about an institution, etc., I say, see, I have not joined an institution, I don't know about institutions. To me, it's a sanctuary of love. It's a home of our love. Everything here speaks of our love. And when people say people are like this or that, I say all the more reason you can see what a divine love and compassion that she has accepted all kinds of human beings without distinction, whoever came, she just accepted and continues to do that. A deep of compassion, a hushed sanctuary, her inward help unbarred a gate in heaven. Love in her was wider than the universe. The whole world could take refuge in her single heart. The great unsatisfied Godhead here could dwell. So it's, one has to be very vast, very strong, very sincere, full of that compassion and self-giving to harbor this power. So that's what the Divine Mother has come this time armed with that. So now when people read it, now there is the conjugal love element. So is there something like that about, you know, we also want a take-home point, in human love, at least till we touch that divine love which we are meant to touch. Is there something in Savitri? All the shades of love are there. So I'll just read something about that. What really human love should become. And of course, the mother has given a message on marriage. What really is true togetherness or true human love. But we can read it here. When Ashupati asked Savitri that go and find somebody who will walk with you. Now he describes it this way. One, in the beats of difference and delight, responsive in divine and equal strains. So there is a deepest aspiration is one. But difference, the two people should not become like same. So it's not about sameness. Discovering new notes of the eternal theme. One force shall be your mover and your guide. One light shall be around you and within. Hand in strong hand, confront heaven's question, life. Challenge the ordeal of the immense disguise. Ascend from nature to divinity's heights. Face the high gods, crowned with felicity. Then meet a greater God, thyself beyond time. So this was the ancient idea behind the Chaturvarna, where we see that after the Grihastha ashram, those who have gone through it, so why there were things which only a grahastha could realize and the sannyasi could not realize? And the reason is that grahastha went through this wide embrace of love. It's not just about challenge of life. So he went together hand in hand and then he was ready to ascend to a greater self. And we see this in Mother's beautiful, play, Ascent to Truth, where, the pair which loves each other, hand in hand, they reach very high, much higher. And the next step is where they become partners in the common game of life, of the ultimate ascent. One more step and all is sky and God. So we see the power of love and human love, very conjugal love, which has the potential to transmute itself. And this is what she brings out again. Elsewhere, there is a beautiful description of, their marriage. Is the future which should become like that. And then the whole journey of love, where on page 632, I'll just read that and then probably, I would like to take more and more questions. So, how love evolves, all the powers, they have to be rescued. And they have to evolve in their own way. And we have this problem. One of the big challenges of human life or earthly life is our mind fixes everything. It fixes people. It limits ourselves, defines everything and fixes in a slot. So when you fix something in a slot, you are unable to really go beyond. Because who has fixed the limit? You have fixed the limit. And this is a problem I see. Now, this is an aside as a psychiatrist or a counselor, that people don't understand that the nature of life is evolutionary. And if you don't evolve, you decline. So people try to, they have had some experience of love in their young age. They want to remain in that state. And they regret when they have, you know, when that state passes away, because something new and higher has to come. Now, if we don't understand that love, and love seeks newness, of all the things, love is something which seeks newness, can only come by a constant evolutionary process. And that's what Sri Aurobindo describes here, which explains many things. A mystic, slow transfiguration works. All our earth starts from mud and ends in sky. And love that was once an animal's desire. You see, that's where many remain stuck and they want, oh, the same thing should continue. No, it cannot. If you do that, after some time, there'll be just a horizontal change. There'll be change of form and phase. That's all. Because you're not evolving. And the other person also is not evolving. So, and love that was once an animal's desire, then a sweet madness in the rapturous heart. Look how he is describing sweet madness, you know, that romantic love which, you know, people enjoy. And then comes the next step. Then an ardent comradeship in the happy mind. Then one cannot be forever satisfied, at least a mental being, a conscious being, if it's only about romance and passion. One needs that companionship of the mind where you can share your deepest, inmost, highest thoughts and aspiration. And then an ardent comradeship in the happy mind becomes a wide spiritual yearnings space, a lonely soul passions for the alone. So when we go through these stages, then we are ready for that energy. Those who escape from life, run away, they're afraid, they cannot realize these truths because they are steps and stages of the ripening and the evolutionary process of love. The heart that loved man thrills to the love of God. A body is his chamber and his shrine. So the question comes, oh, he is talking about ultimately you have to turn to God and love him, and that's the end of the story. No. So Sri Aurobindo takes it further, because that is still incomplete. That is half truth. Then is our being rescued from separateness. All is itself. All is new felt in God. So this is where the mystic seeking for solitary salvation is misguided by a very subtle illusion. The illusion of separateness of me and you. So even though we keep saying that, you know, ego has to be dissolved and then you realize all is Brahman. Well, when you realize that truth, can you ever leave somebody else and seek your own salvation? This is what comes in Savitri toward the end. My spirit's liberty I seek for all. And she says that, you know, it is on earth we have to create. We'll read those lines. So because when we really realize the divine in its fullness, divine is also laboring on earth. Divine embraces the whole creation. And if we cannot embrace the creation and the creatures, then we are really not fulfilled in love. At one place, when death tells her that, you know, you seek freedom, you and Satyavan can go somewhere. Then she says, what is that freedom which cannot feel free even in bonds? So true freedom is even in bonds you are free. So all is itself, all is new felt in God. A lover leaning from his cloister's door gathers the whole world into his single breast. This is what we see in Sri Aurobindo and the mother. Then shall the business fail of night and death, when unity is won, when strife is lost, and all is known, and all is clasped by love, who would turn back to ignorance and pain? And this is the first conquest to be won. So after this, Savitri says, O death, I have triumphed over thee within. So what is the triumph she has won? What is the triumph of love? That my love does not depend on a thing like body or not being a body. But at the same time, she goes and pleads why she needs Satyavan. Because they are together here for that great work. For creating heaven here. For creating a divine life here. So it's very beautiful complementarity that is revealed here. My love eternal sits throned on God's calm. For love must soar beyond the very heavens and find its secret sense ineffable. It must change its human ways to ways divine, yet keep its sovereignty of earthly bliss. So this is where we have to, it is the bright link, because it cannot leave anything. It takes all earth and it takes all heaven and puts them together in one embrace. That's what we see in the mother. And toward the end, she says, for love, oh, two lines, which is the ideal relation as it should be. He, the Eternal's delegate soul in man, my soul, oh, for I, the woman, am the force of God, the manifesting power. He, the Eternal's delegate soul in man. Our lives are God's messenger beneath the stars. To dwell under death's shadow they have come, tempting God's light to earth for the ignorant race. His love to fill the hollow in men's hearts. What is the ultimate gift? People often say, Shurbindo's legacy. The other day somebody was discussing. I said, books and all come much later. See who could write so many volumes and give all this. Shurbindo lost his own eyesight for us to give us a new sight. The mother organized this place from morning 4 o'clock till night 11, 12, 1, 2. She was moving with all of us. So who would do it? It is her love. So his greatest gift is that divine love they have given to earth, and it is stamped everywhere. They have stamped matter with that love, and now matter is bound to seek that. And so often I say that, well, while everything, fine, Vedanta is wonderful and everything is wonderful, but please understand that life didn't stop with Vedanta. Spiritual evolution went further. The love that Sri Krishna brought, the love that Chaitanya brings, the love that mystic poets of the, you know, mystic seers of the just few centuries, as if they were preparing for this love. The love that Sri Ramakrishna embodied. And then the love that Mother and Shobindo bring for earth and mankind. So you don't find this in the Vedas and the Upanishads. It's hinted, everything is hinted in essence. So we must understand there is something which for which earth was being prepared through all this long journey. For love must not cease to live upon the earth, not just love disembodied, going into merging with your Easter in some heaven of beatitude. Love must not cease to live upon the earth, for love is the bright link twixt earth and heaven. Love is the far transcendence angel here. Love is man's lean on the absolute. So this is the kind of love which Savitri embodied, which we find again and again in all the boons that she asks when she is tempted to dwell with Satyavan in the realms beyond, like Pururavas is given that boon. So Shurbindo has written several poems on love, but this is the highest. You see shades of love in Pururavas, where ultimately they are granted a heaven above. They leave the earthly body and they are living there together. Shurbindo has written Ruru and Pramadwara, where love and death, where he brings Pramadwara from the grip of death, but he loses half his life. So it's a half victory. Ulupi, where she sets free Arjun's soul. She has a child, but she says, I know, O mighty Scion, you have great deeds to do, and if I hold you back for my selfish love, the strange part is Arjun is willing. He says, well, how can I leave you and go away? But she sends him. That's a sacrifice of love. No, you go, because there are things waiting for you, and you can't just be domesticated and, you know, kept here within the limits of a earthly family life. So you see the shades of love, but Savitri goes beyond its ultimate. So when she is given this lure that, you know, lose, receive him into boundless Savitri, lose thyself into infinite Satyavan. So this is the option given to Savitri. Book 11 is the soul's choice in the supreme consummation. So Savitri replies, but Savitri answered to the radiant God, in vain thou temptest with solitary bliss two spirits saved out of a suffering world, my soul and his indissolubly linked in the one task for which our lives were born, to raise the world to God in deathless light, to bring God down to the world on earth we came, to change the earthly life to life divine. And now you see that ultimate divine love, the beauty and mystery and the sacrifice of divine love. She has got this possibility and opportunity to live forever in the realms beyond, in some Vaikuntha or Golok or, you know, ultimate world. But what does Savitri say? Oh, Even I keep my will to save the world and man. Even the charm of thy alluring voice, O blissful Godhead, cannot seize and snare. I sacrifice not earth to happier worlds. And that's why they could do what they did. Otherwise, an ordinary bhakta would be like ultimate to dwell with the Godhead forever in the heaven of beatitude. That's the ultimate of love. But here love goes into embracing the whole creation. And that's what she says, that my God can descend into the fires of hell, into the courts of hell. She describes to death that who is the love, or who is the Godhead. And then when he says, you must know, Savitri, when you know, you will cease to love. Savitri says, when I have loved all, then I shall know. Because love is a vast embrace. So we'll just close with this. As I said, this is a very, very fascinating subject, because love is the theme of all the epics. It's not just heroism. Whether you take Iliad, the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, or Kalidas, Abhigyan Shakuntalam, invariably love is there in the background. I mean, Iliad, Shurbindo is another poem which he loved, was very close to his heart, other than Savitri. In the assembly, when Priam calls all of them, all the chieftains, and he asks them that, well, should we go for war or not? And everybody has their reasons, plus and minus. At the end, he calls Helen and he asks only one question to her. Do you still love my son? And she says, yes. And then Priam says, then there will be war. So it's a war which was meant to keep that, you know, that love is secret. It's special. Because he has broken all the norms. And yet the dignity of love and the power of love, it's a Godhead in its own right. And so she reminds in the last book, what is that highest possibility of love? Heaven's touch fulfills but cancels not our earth. And she describes, all that I was before, I am to thee still, close comrade of thy thoughts and hopes and toils. All happy contraries I would join for thee. See, conjugal love, going to what level? All sweet relations marry in our life. And Shurbindu said that there is a truth behind the feminine and the masculine principle. And he said that truth will remain because it derives from the Ishvara and the Shakti. So while there will be a point when there is a journey of the alone to the alone, but eventually embracing the whole world and the masculine and the feminine coming together, Shobhinda speaks of that. I am thy kingdom, even as thou art mine, the sovereign and the slave of thy desire, thy prone possessor, sister of thy soul, and mother of thy wants. Thou art my world, the earth I need, the heaven my thoughts desire, the world I inhabit, and the God I adore. Thy body is my body's counterpart, whose every limb my answering limb desires, whose heart is key to all my heartbeats. This I am, and thou to me, O Satyavan, our wedded walk through life begins anew. So now you see what is the ultimate possibility. And what do such beings do? Not that they are busy building a house for themselves and going on holiday or honeymoon destination. No. Because they come together with a purpose. And that's why she has called back Satyavan. So what do they do? Two fires. Let us give joy to all, for joy is ours. For not for ourselves alone our spirits came, out of the veil of the unmanifest, out of the deep, immense, unknowable, upon the ignorant breast of dubious earth. Two fires that burn towards that parent sun, two rays that travel to the original light, to lead man's soul towards truth and God we are born, to draw the checkered scheme of mortal life into some semblance of the immortal's plan, to shape it closer to an image of God, a little nearer to the idea divine. So all shades of human love can be divinized. And that's why this is so special. Now at the end, last four lines we'll read. Well, when Satyavan has come back, Dhumatsena gets the site and the kingdom, and they come to search for them. A search party comes because Satyavan is late in coming back. Well, he is died. And when all the sages come, they see something very special change in Savitri. So they ask Satyavan, what is it that has happened? And he says, lay all on her. She is the cause of all. And one of the sages remarks that if this is she of whom the world has heard, wonder no more at any happy change. Each easy miracle of felicity of her transmuting heart, the alchemy is. So this is the alchemist energy. So then one of them says, you tell us what is the secret, what is the path you have followed, what is the yoga that you have done, that we see such a so many miracles happening this day, and we trust it is because of you. So what is it that you have done? What is the source of your power? And Savitri replies, awakened. This is the essence of Savitri in these four lines on the last page. Awakened to the meaning of my heart, that to feel love and oneness is to live. And this the magic of our golden change is all the truth I know or seek. Oh sage. Two lines after that, because they are like a subtle humor. When she says love and oneness, that means to live. The sages, how do they respond? Wondering at her and her two luminous words, westward they turned in the fast gathering night. They couldn't understand because she speaks such a language. And I feel, I'll close with this little thing, that partly, you know, it's many of us who have carried Sri Aurobindo, or Sri Aurobindo has allowed us to be, by his infinite grace, some kind of a vehicle. We have turned him into a very difficult philosopher, distant, sitting somewhere in high heavens, and, you know, very, very complex, and we take great joy in explaining the life divine. But Sri Aurobindo and the mother are love. And that touches. And that's what they have come to give. If love is touched, if this cord is touched, then everything else automatically comes. And the mother speaks of this, that those who approach to the mind, it's very long, very complicated. It's like entering a maze. But it's the psychic feeling through which one can go very close. And one last sentence, when Sri Aurobindo was asked, what is the central secret of your sadhana? Because so many things, so many books, so many volumes, Niruddha asked him. He said, there are two secrets, and then he gives only one. He says, psychically, to remain psychically open to the Divine Mother. Which means to give oneself to the Divine Mother. And then Niruddha says, you said one more secret, what is that? Then he says, aspiration for the divine life. So, well, Savitri is the ultimate secret, the story of love, and one could go on. There are so many passages, but I've just read a few passages, and I would love to have questions instead. Jema.
Thank you, Alokda. I know there will be some questions and comments, I'm sure, but Bijoy, if you are here, maybe we can start with yours since you were waiting yesterday.
Yes, sure. Alok Bhai, thank you very much for explaining Savitri in such a humorous and in a common man's language. And actually, the queries I was having, most of the thing got clarified in today's session.
Okay.
One query I am raising here, you know, while reading any epic and or any book for that sake, we usually carry a core idea while going through the incidences or conversations, like while reading Ramayana,
yes. Uphold
righteousness at any cost.
Hmm.
So similarly, while reading Savitri, what is the core idea we should carry, and with what attitude we should read Savitri?
Okay, thank you. Wonderful. So one, of course, we read today, the core idea is love that unites. It's the story of love versus death. Love which is lifting creation toward the supreme, so that creation can manifest the supreme. That is the core idea. Now, when we say lifting creation, then two more ideas get automatically linked in it. So it is the earth's ascension to the supreme. Because earth is meant to manifest the divine powers, divine capacities and divine elements inside. And similarly, when we speak of since we are speaking of the ascension, it automatically implies humanity's ascension, because human beings are the one which are meant to be the mediators between earth and the supreme. So the core idea is love, which is raising humanity, raising earth toward the highest possibilities of manifestation. And at the same time, we have on the other hand, humanity, that's development, where one can consciously collaborate in this process. And automatically comes the third element that, well, but there has to be someone who can start the process, somebody who can initiate the process, somebody who can help us in the process, somebody who can carry us through. And that's where comes the descent of divine love in the form of the Divine Mother. So is the story of the Divine Mother as the avatar who has come to save humanity, to rescue, to carry it through in this long and difficult journey. So core is love, but love in its expression of earth moving toward the supreme, love as in human beings lifting humanity out of its state of ignorance towards immortality, which means it's not just human effort, but it's by the contact with the divine that one can ascend. And love in terms of its vastness of carrying the entire human race, as we see embracing humanity. And love, most importantly, as the Divine Mother, as the descent of love, because without that nothing further can happen. It is she who descends embodying love in matter, and therefore matter can ascend. So it also answers, this may not be the question, but it answers, because people often say that, you know, now that Mother and Sri Aurobindo are not physically there. So of course I have answered this on many levels, but one simple thing is, see, that love which they have implanted now on matter, it will seek that love. And therefore it is destined to now get transmuted. Like Krishna, when he left, and Sri Aurobindo says this in one of his aphorisms, about four great events, and one of them is Krishna's exile to Vrindavan. And he says it created devotional religion. Because the fact that Krishna came there, lived, and then he left, that entire thing. Now what happened? The streams of bhakti that were released by the Gop and Gopis, till date they continue to nourish earth nature. So the fact that Mother and Sri Aurobindo came embodying this earth, now I'm not going into, you know, they are still there and all that is true. But I'm just saying, even if none of this, one way to understand, they came and didn't give a path. They just touched matter with that love. They touched humanity with that love. And now that touch is implanted on material soil and our earth nature and on the human stuff. And this will go on transmuting itself. Yeah.
Yes, Monica, and then Vijayita.
Hi, Alita.
Hi.
Thank you for this talk today. And I was pondering on two questions. One is human love, as you said. But when we face the human relationships in this on this earth, someone gave me a guidance that when you have a difficult relationship with someone or a challenging, see mother's picture in their face, and it is so difficult for me, and I cannot see that. Rather than that, what are the
So we will come to that. So first, there is the possibility of human love being transmuted into divine love. Doesn't mean it automatically gets realized, and it doesn't mean that in the pair you straight away, whatever marriage through the whether love marriage or social arrangement is destined to become that. No, that should be very clear. And there are enough letters of Sri Aurobindo to guide. And people couldn't understand that what is he really wanting? Is he wanting that we should have human relationship or not? So Sri Aurobindo says, I want it on a true basis, the psychic basis, because I don't want to see it broken at the touch of ego. So we must understand, so long as the ego is the operating system, so long as desires and passions govern our nature, it's just a dream. And it's good to dream, but we must also know how to realize it. Now, since we all carry this dream, on the other hand, we have the limitations of nature and we get into a relationship. So what should we do? Now, this idea of seeing the divine in everyone is wonderful. Yes, Yajnavalk also advises that. But that does not lead to an individual. See, these two things should not be mixed. That, well, therefore, my individual love story will take a divine turn. No, it won't. It means now you have decided to engage in yoga. Now you have undertaken the journey of the alone to the alone, which we read. So you have to drop those expectations that now because I am seeing the divine, well, you have to understand that, well, now I am no more having any human frame of human expectations. Now I have to take yoga, and if I have to take yoga, I have to see the divine in everyone. And that will be a tremendous help, tremendous, wonderful. This story will probably close there at one level, continue at another level, not as, you know, where one is at whatever level the one person is, the other has taken to yoga, like Mirabai, like, you know, other, there are so many stories I could go into. So that's how one should be, because otherwise if one lingers and gets pain and hurt, so we should not combine these two things. We must understand the difference. There is a joy of togetherness which Aurobindo reveals in Savitri, which is conjugal love transmuting into divine love and an ideal partner. Yes, but it doesn't mean that whoever one is married to, one is destined to that. And Mother and Aurobindo's life is that classic example. Even Krishna and Radha, see, they never married. But if you talk about ideal love, you speak about Radha and Krishna. On the other hand, we have the Mother and Aurobindo. Mother was married twice. And Aurobindo was married before that. I am not saying that they got married. But I am just saying that that ideal relation, truth, is something to be discovered as you grow within, and probably circumstance, I am taking a step further beyond, which may not be directly asked, but which is implicit in the question. Well, when Aurobindo was asked this, that why do yogis like Buddha, like you, get married if they have to ultimately move on? So he gave a very, partly a humorous answer, but very profound answer. He said, well, then when they get married, they are in ignorance. And when they realize that journey, then that whole thing drops off. Now, if we look at it like this, when two people come together, I am not talking of yogis, but I am talking of ordinary life, people are in ignorance, then one person suddenly, destiny starts evolving. Let's put it like that. And along a certain line, even if both are evolving, they may evolve along very different lines. They may be destined. Now, when this process starts, it's not necessary that the two have to be together. So we have to understand that things that were valid in ignorance, valid from a social point of view, valid from a moral standpoint, are no more valid when you take to the spiritual life. I leave with that suggestion, because this is the truth which we can see manifesting in human life today, and people cannot understand what's happening. But yes, because one doesn't want to disturb life and doesn't want to disturb its arrangement, it's not good. And if you to run after desire is also never a good thing, or passion. So what one does is one takes this as a circumstance, as an opportunity to grow within. But that's an individual journey now, where you see then not only in the partner, you have to see the divine in everyone, which include the tree, the stones. And I agree that is most difficult to see it in a human being, and least of all in partner, because the ego gets very close and starts rubbing very close. There are reactions, and they come up, you know, because once certain reactions get into the nature, then it's very difficult to get rid of them. So one has to be really, really has the soul of a hero, that one will go past that. One will observe one's own reactions. The other person may or may not change. That becomes irrelevant then. But one grows in compassion. One grows in... I'll close with one little, small little story of one of the sadhikas. She was a Russian, theater person. She came here and she left her husband and came with her son. And so last 6 months she got close to me. Old age, and I would go every week, and just she wanted to share things. So one day she says, you know what, I have been waiting for you. So I said, what is it? She says, you know, I must tell you that I have forgiven my husband. This is after 30 years. Okay. I said, that's wonderful. But what made you? She said that line from the Gita that, you know, that like a fly on the wheel, we are driven. Yantra Rudini Maya. So I said, that's the line. She said, yes. So I realized that, you know, he was in ignorance and I was in ignorance. So, you know, why carry this inside? So I have forgiven him. Now, this released in her such a joy. So you see, that idea, that compassion which looks the struggling human from below. But that's not a married life anymore. But that's a life where you look upon with compassion. It makes relationship very beautiful and better despite all the problems. And it makes you grow and evolve. So that it will do. But that's the limit. But again, if the partner becomes, now this is in general I am saying, becomes an obstacle to one's growth, then one should follow that part of Meera where she is advised by Tulsidas, Jaake Priyana Ram Abhaydehi, So Chhaadiye Koti Bairi Sam Jadbi Param Sanehi. So that's the other truth, and that's where we see in the life of Mother and Shurvinda also. Nothing before the divine. Nothing is more important than that. Until one discovers that love. Okay?
Second one is, how do we take the essence of what we read in our daily lives? I watch your videos, I watch other videos and reading apart from work and everything.
Yeah.
But there's something always, there's no practical application.
So Mother has answered this in one of her prayers, and at least that's the path I have followed, I must tell you, that it's no use reading a teaching if one to profit from a teaching, one should put it into practice. It's no use just reading it, something like that. So what I used to do, at least whatever I read, little practical here, little practical there, tried to put into practice. Now it's difficult, doesn't matter. And practice itself is a very vast. But always in that practice, there is a core which should remain completely untouched. And to me, I can share my understanding of Shurvinda and the Mother. And that core is open to the Mother. Keep open to her. Keep transparent to her. Don't hide anything from her. Tell her shamelessly, without fear, without guilt, that Mother, this is what I am experiencing, this is what is happening in me, this is what is happening to my body, my nerves, my emotions and everything. So slowly these parts come into contact with the Divine Mother, and as this, so this love, because whom do you share everything? See, if you see, long back I used to wonder that how can I, to feel toward the Divine as a beloved. So I used to have this little kink inside that I want to do that, but how to do that? So then I realized that who is the beloved before whom you are totally unabashed, you can just bear yourself completely without any fear that you will be judged, whether you will be understood, misunderstood. You share all your plans with your beloved. So this is how I look at it, that the Divine is the beloved before whom, of course, he is Mother, Father, everything, all sweet relations, marry with her and life will be beautiful. So this is the core of Sri Aurobindo's yoga, and then there are all the practices which, according to our convenience, stage of evolution, we can do it. And naturally, when we love someone, we remember the person. So remembrance of the Mother. Yes. Yes. So that's how I take it. Core practice.
Yes.
So read her books and their books as love letters. I've actually read Life Divine like that, and I tell people, don't read it as a work of philosophy. He whom you love has written this for you. You may not understand, doesn't matter. Read it. It's a joy. Yeah.
So my question is, so how should we be prepared so that we don't get a bitter experience in whom
you love? Oh no, that's impossible. If you are lucky, you will get a bitter experience. If you are very fortunate. Because that means the Divine will is teaching us that all human love, this is a sentence of the Mother, all human love at the end leaves something bitter. And yes, people may not show it, they like to hold back, they deal with it. So human love at the present human level, now of course transmuted love is obviously different, but at the present human level is destined to turn bitter, then only human beings turn toward the Divine. If it is all sugary, that means something is being hidden behind the scenes, or that means that Divine love has not yet looked at us. So, I mean, I am sorry to sort of dishearten, but this is a truth, which truth is truth. So, only other way is, well, as some people advise, that, well, there is only one advice, keep quiet. Now, that's not relationship. That's compulsion. Wherever there is compulsion, that's not love. Love thrives in freedom. So there are people who advise this, don't do this, don't talk, and try to respect all that. If anything you have to do with a compulsion, love is a movement which doesn't like compulsion. It's a joy. When you do Mother's work, it should be a joy, an act of joy. Not a compulsion that 6 hours I have to put in a register in the ashram or anywhere. So love brings that joy. And if the joy is missing, then something is amiss. So that's how it is. So, but bitterness can be avoided, not within, but a relationship can go on if people remain silent. A lot of problems can be sorted out simply by mastery of speech. But that's a different story. That's not only about marriage, but about life in general. Speak as less as one can. I mean, about beautiful things, yes. But don't speak of personal things. People will either quietly laugh at you or pity you, or they will give all kinds of weird advices. Go to court, do this, do that. And because they don't understand. So they don't understand what love is. So best is speak and share only with the Divine Mother. But if they are sharing something, yes. But keep your sorrows to yourself or share them with the Divine Mother. That's it. Sharing with human beings is disastrous. Yeah. Sorry for that disappointing note. But I am just being truthful. And it's a grace. It's a grace. I am telling you, it's a grace.
I think it is very wise. Yeah. Very wise suggestions. Any more questions from either yesterday's talk based on the topic that was discussed yesterday or today? Please feel free to ask. Unmute yourself. Or anything in general.
Yeah, anything in general. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
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 I'm curious.
Namaste. Namaste.
Sorry. I'll let somebody go.
Yeah.
Who was it? Besides Monica, somebody else was saying something?
Yeah.
I wanted to.
Okay. Renu, yes. Renu ji, yes, please go ahead. And if you would like to open your camera, that is also good.
Yes.
I would like to understand Savitri more deeply, like for the regular reading, and because I've been reading it, but I'm not able to.
Yes. So one needs the context, that little bit, so it orient the human mind. It's like it's easy to say that wherever you take a dip in the ocean, it's the same water. But it's also true that one likes to be oriented a little bit, and to that extent, some of the commentaries, some of the talks do help. And I feel stupid and silly recommending that. I have also given the talks. There are so many people who have given, and there are books on that. Pick up any of them. So whichever you feel appealing to your temperament. So my talks are regularly on Aroma, all the talks on Savitri, and also a whole commentary is there. There are many others. There are others also on Aroma. So you can pick up. And one thing which I can say from my side is that wherever you feel any difficult passage or something which is disorienting, please feel free to write. So, there is a kind of, you can say, mother service. There is a website called Ask Alokda, where anybody can send an email, askalokda@gmail.com, go on to the website and just put the question. It could be any question on anything, including Savitri. So a lot of people ask questions on Savitri there also. So if you write, I'll be very happy to reply to the best of my ability.
So can anyone type the website name which
they have mentioned? Ask, very simple it is. askalokda.org. But if you type Ask Alokda, Alokda is how I am generally called in the ashram. Ask comes as a prefix, so Ask, askalokda, .org is the website. And if you want to send an email, so that's my email for these questions, askalokda@gmail.com. So either ways you can send.
Yes, I put all
thank you, sir.
In the yes. Chat box also. Please, you can copy it from there. The website and his email ID. Yes, and I can say this during the lockdown, the line by line, that whole series of videos. I really, that was really a good sustaining course.
There was a whole story behind it, how it came, but it was Mother's grace. And yes. That was a great joy.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for doing all that work all, for us.
Joy, yes. joy, her joy.
Yes. And I think one of the things that you keep, I keep hearing this in different ways you are saying this, And I'm reminded of what Mother said, that who can understand Sri?
Yes, yes, yes.
All we can do is love him a little.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And you talked about act of love.
And the whole purpose is that through, whether you say talks or anything, you fall in love with Sri Aurobindo and the Mother. Then I believe that any speaker, anybody should just move aside. Of course, people get attached, that's different. I mean, that's a part of our human. But, you know, it's to bring in contact with her, that's all. Savitri brings you contact with the consciousness of Sri Aurobindo and the Mother as one in two, or two in one. That's something very beautiful, because it contains both lives and Sri Aurobindo writing about the Mother. So it's wonderful.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes, Chitra, please go ahead.
I think some people wanted to ask. I'm happy to go after Bijoy.
Bijoy also had something.
Yes, yes. Please, please.
Yeah. See, Alokta, मैं आपका एक वीडियो देख रहा था. उसमें भगवान के द्वार पे कभी फेलर नहीं होता है.
हाँ, बिल्कुल.
आपने एक बताया था कि मिथ्या अहंकार
हाँ
लाभ के लिए सबसे बाधक है. तो मेरा ये क्वेश्चन है कि एक मिथ्या अहंकार को ओवरकम कैसे किया जाएगा?
Prem, that's the best. So, that's the short answer. The line, first of all, ki jisko Bhagwan le ja rahe hain, wo uska failure nahi hota. Wo Savitri ki ek line aapne yaad dila di. His failure is not failure whom God leads. So, even if looks like we are failing, it is only to lift us higher. So, we must understand the journey in a very vast landscape. But ahankar ka jahan tak sawal hai, ye ek bahut bada vishay hai, but to make it short, कि अहंकार को पहले वो ना स्लो फायर पे मेल्ट करना पड़ता है. तो तामसिक अहंकार से राजसिक अहंकार भला, राजसिक से सात्विक भला. जब सात्विक अहंकार आता है, जहाँ है मैं का भाव, लेकिन हम चीज़ों को सही ढंग से करना चाहते हैं, हमारे अंदर ये भाव उठता है अपने आप कि मैं कहीं अपने कर्तव्य में चूक तो नहीं कर रहा हूँ, कहीं मैं गलत तो नहीं कर रहा हूँ, किसी को पीड़ा तो नहीं दे रहा हूँ, वो सारे जो सात्विक अहंकार से जुड़े हैं. बिकॉज अल्टीमेटली वन राइजेज अबव दीज थिंग्स, बट देर इज अ पॉइंट वेन वन गोज थ्रू दीज स्टेट्स. नाउ वेन वन इज इन दैट स्टेट ऑफ सात्विक बैंडविथ, जहाँ अहंकार है लेकिन उसके अंदर एक इट्स नॉट जस्ट मी एंड मी अलोन, बट इट्स अबाउट लाइक To put it in simple terms, tamasic ahankar is nobody, nothing, nowhere. Rajasic ahankar is me and you, but me, mainly me. But sattvic ahankar is we are all together. So there is still the ego, I am there, but also I take cognizance of everybody else, their needs, their aspects, which most, you know, cultured people have that. बट इसके आगे अगर जाना है तो सात्विक अहंकार को भगवान से जोड़ना है, यानी कि surrender to the divine, that well, I live by my certain framework of values, framework of ideas. Now I want to live for you. Nothing else is important for me. Nothing else is, you know, to obey the divine, to surrender to the divine, to sacrifice one's life to the divine, to give oneself to the divine. So, dhire dhire, ye sab love ke hi aspects hain. So, dhire dhire, wo sara ahankar ko bhagwan apne andar samet lete hain. Aur uski jagah jo hamara true individual hai, psychic being, wo nikal ke bahar aata hai. So that's the short answer, that love the divine. In fact, agar wo nahi kar sakte hain, to sattvic usme aata hai, you love creation. Sattvic people do develop that kindness, all the devasuri sampada mein jo qualities aap dekhte hain, jisme kindness hai, maitri hai, maitri karuna evascha, the sympathy, compassion, all these things are part of the sattvic. So these also help us to step out of the ego, but they don't remove the ego. So ego goes only when we turn toward the divine. Then prem gali ati sakri tame do na samahi, jab hari jab main tha tab hari nahi, jab hari tab main nahi. To wo to phir bhagwan khatam kar dete hain ego apne aap. Agar ego rehti hai to utha utha ke, I have a term, dhobi pachhad yog. He makes it better. Ant mein aap bologe tu hi tu, tu hi tu, tu hi tu. There is nothing else. वो गाना है ना, तू ही तू, बस ultimate, because that's where we have to go. Yeah.
Yes, yes. धोबी पछाड़
को. Yoga. Yeah.
Yes, yes, Chitra ji, please.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
So now in the, it's a general question, not
yeah,
only
yeah.
on the talk, but on
yes.
the concept of love.
Yes.
Now. All children go through a phase
yes.
where they feel no one loves them. And, while it's, and I,
I'm seeing this across many, many families, close friends and all. Everyone goes through a phase, but you know, also as they grow up, then things settle down also. But during this tumultuous phase, how do we make children feel they are loved and also have a feeling of self-confidence which comes from love?
Yes.
So there will be some ups and downs. So if you could talk a little.
Yes, yes, very much and very correct observation as a, you know, psychiatrist, though I don't practice psychiatry that way, but yes, I see so many children, their parents. Now, you see, why do they feel? If you go to the core, it's because they are suddenly undergoing a change. So, adolescence is the time when all this happens. So, their body is changing, their thoughts are changing, their peer pressure is there. So, they are going through a great turmoil inside. Now, at that point of time, they want to be understood and they want themselves to be understood, both ways. But most of the parents do the mistake of judging them and very, very almost labeling or saying, you shouldn't do this, you should do this, and they start giving their own experiences. This is just the way one should not do. So we should just listen to them, just be with them. You know, after around 15, you have to become like friend. Just spend some time with them. Very often parents assume the role of that we know it and, you know, they become not parent but teachers. But teachers have their own place. So be a parent, sit with them, watch a movie. So not that this is a bad movie, this is a horrible movie. They will go through, they will read Mills and Boons, they will probably watch a Shah Rukh Khan romance. Don't start saying, nah, 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 humare samay mein, you know, a lot of parents do it, I'm not saying about you. And this is very damaging because you can't jump through the stages. So you have to watch and you have to discuss, share. That's how in ashram people see movies. The 1942 A Love Story was shown in the ashram. Now somebody would hear about it, they will be scandalized. Blue Lagoon. So it was shown in the ashram. Those who have seen it know. So it can be very scandalizing. But the mother knew that human beings pass through all these phases. Let them see and then discuss. Achha, kaisa laga? How was it? What do you feel? Then they feel connected. But we are too judgmental and too impatient. We want to as if change them by some magic wand. But they have to go through their own errors. Often I tell them that, well, when people say that, you know, in our days, we didn't do these errors. I said, yes, you did your own. So they are doing their own. Well, everybody goes through error. It's a learning process. So we have to be very wide, very generous in our inner heart, very compassionate toward the human condition. It's not easy, human life. You know, these children, they are facing so much pressure and they are totally confused and we don't discuss with them issues. Sexuality, for instance, it's just kind of a taboo. Now they're going through it. So where do they learn? They learn from their friends. Now, would the friends know? We understand that, you know, it's like another nightmare you are entering. So we need to, the child should have the confidence that the child can discuss, ask, share anything. And this is a confidence to be developed. It needs a little time. It needs a little smiling attitude. It. Oh my God, no. That you know, child is watching your expression. If the child says, you know what, something about someone. Oh my God, oh, this is the age to do these things. A lot of parents make these remarks. They suddenly sit on moral judgments. Anyways, the age of morality is over. So we have to understand that, you know, they are entering an intuitive cycle. So we have to grow up to their level and be very wide, very generous with any human being, actually. Because human life is not easy because it's a transitional life. Animal life, for all its difficulties, is easy because animals are reconciled within the frame. If they have rain, they are not worrying that, you know, I need a shelter, I must build a house. They are satisfied within their, gods have an easy life, they are cushy in their heaven. But human life doesn't have one standard, it's an evolving life. So we have to just make them conscious and then let them be free. Not like a set of do's and don'ts, like basically make them conscious about all that they are doing in a very loving, kind way. Don't overemphasize a point, leave it at that, and then leave them free to go through. Be with them, but do not make them feel that you're, you know, watching over them. But you should be with them, even if you keep a, you know, little eye, but it should not become like a hawk's eye and they begin to allow them that space, freedom to make mistakes, to experiment and grow. Then they develop the confidence. Because otherwise, they are very shaky. They are going through turmoil, storms, and if parents also take it, like many times I say, everything that a child says, you take it so seriously. I remember a child, this girl suddenly, she caught it from the students, from those around. Lovely child with lovely parents, suddenly she, all, and she was sharing with me, all, parents are vultures. I laughed. I said, where do you get this? Then I laughed, that child, then I talked to the parents. I said, but don't take it so seriously, because she told one day, you people are like vultures. They are such loving parents. So I said, you see, you have to play the role of being the compassionate one. You have to understand that the child has just picked up a language. Child doesn't even fully comprehend that what it means, So slowly, you have to keep giving love, increase the dose of love, not an indulgent love of that kind that chal jo chahiye to le le, that's never a good thing. But a love which knows where to be firm, but is largely, understanding, caring, compassionate, then they come around. It's a difficult passage at all since. I've written a lot of articles on that, and it's a difficult passage.
Yes. Any other questions from any of the participants? Okay. Well, if there are no questions. Yes. Was somebody saying something?
Namaste.
Namaste.
Yes, I'm Ranganayi ki Rajagopala.
Ha, namaste. So,
as Alanda was saying, that whenever we face some situation, we can express everything openly to mother. Yes.
Yes.
There are some decisions or some situations where how I have to act, I'm confused like.
Yes. So what you should do in decision making, there are 2-3 steps to be followed. Mind will be confused because it weighs pros and cons, what it should and what it should not do. It starts thinking of the fall, which is going to happen. Now, first of all, we must understand that wherever we are thinking of the result, it is already creating a kind of kink in decision making. So what the aim should be, that I must do what is the best and the right thing. Now, many times it's a difficult choice, but at least we must be oriented. The moment we say, if I say this or if I do this, this may happen. Now already there is a distortion which is coming in. So the goal should be that I must do the right thing, the true thing, the best thing based on my own highest, deepest, urge. Now when we have that set right, still how to know what is the best thing to do? So here comes that what is in our hands is the right attitude. So the right attitude is this, that I do my best, sit quietly, and then apply reason, it is given to us, the discerning intellect, and see whether this decision is aligned with my goal of life. So if there is, like, it may hurt somebody, it may be good to someone, but is it in sync with my goal? Am I compromising on my core? So core is something we should not be compromised upon. And so one should keep that in mind, and then still we don't know whether it's the best thing or not. So stay quiet, see that, use the reason, that, well, is it aligned with my core? And then act in your best spirits, best attitude, and then leave it entirely to the mother. That, mother, in my ignorance, this is what I have decided. I don't know whether this is the thing you want me to do or not. Rest is yours. The result may be pleasant, result may be painful, result may be success, result may be failure. But any which way, I'll grow closer to the mother and grow in consciousness if I do it. The fact of straining itself will make our consciousness evolve. Instead of just blindly taking a decision, or based on just an impulsive choice, or based on just my desired self, these distort the choices. So they should be quieted. Never take decision when there is a state of confusion and desire is pushing too much. Just stay quiet, try to quieten that storm. Only when quiet, then this next phase applies. Yes.
No, at times some decision on the spot we have to take. Some people, they ask for something. Mm-hmm. Immediately they want the answer from us. Mm-hmm. And that time I just take 1 minute, I go to mother's home, I pray.
Yes. Yes, yes.
It creates problems.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So this is a very nice way to do it. Yeah.
Still it has created problem. That is the thing.
Yes. But this is a nice way to do it. Yes, absolutely. Most problems are created by the mind. There are some which are genuine. Very few.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think Moshini had one raised hand or something.
Yes, Moshini. She can ask.
Yeah. I have a question too. Namaste.
Yes, you can. You can put yourself on the video. Yeah. Yes, tell me.
Okay. Yeah. So my question is, there are animals in the wild, and they are very well adapted to where they are. There are domesticated animals, and they're not always like they're in a very dissonant setting. So I wanted to know that we assume that they are suffering a lot of the time. Stray animals are said to be suffering. We view them with pity, and I know that pity is not love. But I just wanted to know: are stray animals suffering? Do dogs suffer?
Very good question, and. This is a typical one of those things of human ignorance, whereas it is said that, the surgeon who prematurely cut the cocoon of a caterpillar and prevented it from growing into a butterfly. So nature in the animal world, the whole evolution is through the challenges. See, the street dogs are much better adapted. They are at one level stray dogs, but they are much better adapted to life, to situations. So this is how nature is evolving them. Yes, I understand if an animal is sick or a dog is sick, you can take to the vet and do something about it. But this idea that, it's the same idea that orphanages people try to open. So it's the same idea. It's counter-evolutionary. We have to understand there is a wisdom which is working in creation. And while man's sympathy is a very nice thing, kindness is a nice thing, but we should be careful. Are we disturbing the evolutionary process? It's like giving one day very good meal to an orphanage. Now people start looking for that meal, and while one should help animals, but to start domesticating them, it was never a good thing. See, there was a cat, there were six cats, and there was a dog who used to come to. A dog would carry the basket to Shurvindo. His name was Goldie. And the cat was very close to mother. But mother let them just be themselves. People took a wrong example and thought mother loves cats and we must start keeping cats and dogs in the house. She never encouraged it. In fact, she said, you should not be done. Animals lose their natural instinct and human beings gain some of their animal aspects. But yes, help them. If you want to help them, fine. That's okay. But a kind of preoccupation to really humanize them, put them in human circumstances. Some people, that's not very healthy from a, it's, it may satisfy you, but it's not good for the animal. Yeah.
So that's very good question, Moshini. So I think that the trend today with a lot of young, whatever generation, Z or whatever, they don't want children. Young couples, but they would rather be pet parents.
Yes,
so it's really very a strange trend.
Yes. Because they want children, but a children who will not say anything, who will be perfectly obedient, which is they want somebody who will listen, but not say that you are wrong or you are so.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's a comfort zone we create of exchange of emotions. That's all. Yeah.
Yes. So it's just receiving love without any.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so shall we close here?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much for Alokda, for all these, really gems that you, we'll be listening to these recordings again, so many points. Thank you so much for spending this much time with us and all the participants on behalf of everyone. I would like to express my gratitude to the Divine Mother and to you for bringing her and Sri Aurobindo's message of love and the work of the dual avatar to us. So, and thank you to all the participants for joining and for really making this a beautiful celebration of 75 years of Savitri. We'll be organizing more such things in coming months.
Thank you.
So
Jai Ma.
Namaste.
Namaste. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Jai Ma.
So, Jayama. We'll just sit in silence if you...